Today on the Camera Journal podcast, I am joined by Tim Mulligan. He is the author of a new graphic novel called Witchland. And I thought it was very interesting because I wanted to know what the process of doing a graphic novel, because I've done a couple and it's super intense. So I kind of wanted to see what his production process was. And then there's also a fun tie-in with the atom bomb and the Manhattan Project and all that type of thing, which is very trendy because of Oppenheimer. So his release schedule can't be beat in terms of timeliness and all this type of thing. So welcome to the Camden Journal podcast.
Hey, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yes, and for those that are listening, not watching, he already has his own merch. He has his own Witchland beanie, which is just amazing. So this man is merchandised, he is optimized, he is good to go. So why don't you tell us, why don't we start out by telling us a little about yourself and your book?
Yeah, great. So Witchland is based on actually a play. So I wrote a play in 2021, and I really wanted to write a scary play because there weren't a lot of scary, horror genre plays out there, and I'm a fan of horror. So, and I have this story that I wanted to tell, which was really based on my hometown and my kind of life and high school years especially. And I grew up in a town in eastern Washington State called Richland. And this happens to be on the site of this nuclear plant called Hanford. And it's where back in the day in the 40s, they, produced plutonium, and they built that was used to create bombs, like the bomb that was dropped on Japan was created with that plutonium. And a lot of weird things have happened due to Hanford over the years, people are getting sick, and there's been health concerns there. And so I thought it'd be
Well, and they
really
have all those tunnels. I lived in
yeah.
Seattle for 10 years. They have all those open concrete tunnels with stuff laying around, and I
I mean,
remember,
there's, yeah, all that. Go
I remember
on.
when I first moved to Washington, I want to say 2015, we had a stay-at-home order because there was elevated levels of radiation there. It was all over the news. It was a whole thing. And everyone was like, "Stay inside, stay inside. We don't know how much, radiation." So it's a perfect spot for horrible things to happen.
Thank you. Yeah. So the play was finished, and then the play got produced, and it ran in San Diego for a month. Right now, it's currently running in Palm Springs. It's going to New York in April, and I just thought that it was such a dark, kind of fun, funny, scary slash story that I thought it would really lend itself well to a graphic novel format. And I'm a big fan of comics and graphic novels, and so that's what I set out to do. So last year, I really just kind of got to work in converting the screenplay or the play to a graphic novel format, hired a graphic designer, and the book gets published on Amazon, this week.
Very
Well, it's
nice,
it's
very
available on
nice,
Amazon,
very
it's available
nice.
everywhere, but it gets published this week.
Very nice, very nice. So yeah, was this a pandemic project? How did you decide to do this?
Yeah, the play was. I mean, I'd never written a play before, and so I was, quarantining like everybody else, and I figured that I would use that time wisely. And I've always wanted to write a play. It was my first one, so the play was born and created all through the pandemic, and it really got me excited to be a writer. Since then, I've written a couple plays, a couple follow-ups, and this graphic novel is the first of the graphic novels in what I hope to be will be a series. The second one is now under is written, and it's being drawn up now by my graphic designer. So I hope to have that come out later on in the year. But yeah, I think to answer your question, the pandemic, for as awful as it is and was for some of us, it kind of spurred, if we're home alone and can't go out, it kind of spurred this creative side, to do things we never had time to do before,
Yeah, no, for certain. I was not nearly so fun. I spent most of the pandemic. I spent the first 6 months of it traveling, because I broke up with my girlfriend 2 weeks before lockdown happened. So I was like
Oh,
functionally homeless. I traveled 8,850 miles between February 29th and September 15th, 2020.
wow.
And then I ended up actually going to grad school. That's how I spent the pandemic.
Good. Well, see.
And so yeah, so I got my MFA. That was the pandemic for me. So yes, no, I think that's absolutely powerful. That's a wonderful thing. So for someone who, had you written much before, or did you really just like, oh, I have all this time, let me get a piece of paper and see what comes out?
Yeah, I had not written creatively. Like I wrote a leadership book. I mean, I've been a during, by day I work a day job. I've been in human resources for 20 something years. So back in 2016, 2017, I published a leadership book that did pretty well. And I wrote that. I used to work at the San Diego Zoo, so I did it as a project for my company. So and that book did well. It was called Roar. And so that's the only book that I, officially have published. I've always loved creative writing. I'm a fan of all things pop culture. I'm a theater junkie. I love, like I said, scary things. So I had these ideas, but to answer your question, I had not written a play. I really had to kind of educate myself on how to format, a script. And then,
Well, I was
but I
wondering
have
in
this
terms of
nice, because
process, like how did you develop? Because a lot of people would start that, have no process, no way of doing it, would quit a third of the way through. I mean, I say people, that's how the very first thing I wrote was a play, and didn't have a process. I had very little follow through, and I just kind of slammed it to the end and whatever have you. But like, I always ask about process in these things because you just kind of went out there and did this and actually managed to get something done. Most people would have given up a third of the way through. So like, what was your process that got you to the end?
Yeah, so I told myself, I'm pretty disciplined, self-disciplined, and I told myself at the very onset that I'm going to finish this. Maybe the play will never see the light of day, but I know how a lot of plays just sit around and it's really hard to launch a play, but I wanted to finish it. And so my process, I had the idea because I lived it, and so I wrote what I knew, and so I wrote about this story of the high school kids and this witch because I lived through that, and also in this town that I was born and raised in. So I just really storyboarded out a play. I know I see lots of plays, and so I wrote, what, like 15 scenes, and then I just started knocking them out one at a time. And to answer your other question, I think towards, I kind of tinkered with it at nights during the at night, and then as the pandemic, begin to 2021, and I realized that, oh, shoot, I might be going back to the office one of these days. And so I made myself just lock myself in and go into high gear and just knock it out so I could finish it. So I had an end date that, and I made myself stick with it. Now I'm not as disciplined, but it's caused me to block out time in my calendar where I can be creative, which is a weird thing. But I think if you work full all day and I have kids and stuff, I think that I need to block the time out or it's not going to happen. And so I was very regimented, I'd say, and disciplined in getting this play done. And
No,
then with the
I think
graphic
that's
novel
very
as well.
important. No, I mean, I know it's so good because here's what happens. Too often in these conversations, and you'll hear this in the writing community a lot, people will be kind of like, how does anyone, with kids in life get any writing done? And so it's like, it's so good for you to say, like, no, I have to block off time, and all this in order to make it happen because people, don't talk about that stuff. Particularly, like, men don't talk about that a lot. Women will talk about it sometimes, but men does specifically say, like, yeah, I, need to block off time to make sure that this happens and gets done. So I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, and then the play. So the play, I then pitched it to some people that I knew in San Diego, and they run a theater company, and they actually, I mean, what happened was I drank a lot and had a reading of the play where I played all the characters of the play one day at a pool party, and they responded very favorably and said, we want to produce this. And the next thing, 6 months later, it was being launched as a play. So I had a very unique experience. The graphic novel, I had just read about some folks. I worked for an AI company up in Seattle, but remotely, and I read about some folks who were experimenting with, AI software programs to create graphic novel works. And so I thought, well, I should try that because I have Witchland. I have this project. And so once I converted it all into like a, this play into like 900 boxes, saying what happens in every box, like a graphic novel, then I tried to do it myself with using AI, but it was really hard. And I don't think the software programs were great. So I instead got on Upwork and put it out there as a project. And I was amazed by all these graphic designers around the world who were bidding for it. And I just found this amazing graphic designer out of Mexico. And he and I worked, he did all of it. And now he's working on my second one. So it's been a great collaboration.
No, that's tremendous. That's tremendous. I always that's really cool. I graphic novels are something. So when I was in grad school, I'm very interested in the different ways people can tell stories. And so in my last semester, I had fulfilled almost all of my reading credits. I think I only had three books to go. And so I'm like, let's have some fun. Let's, break out of novels and all this heady stuff that I've been reading. And so I got some graphic novels in, and I did one about George Takei's graphic novel about being in the Japanese internment camp, which is
Oh,
very
yeah, sure.
interesting. Yeah. And then I did another one about it was this kind of long dream sequence written by this guy in Brazil, about this man who gets ran over by a car and in the liminal space between life and death relives his whole life, past, present, and his potential futures. And I'm just fascinated. I don't know if you find this yourself. The graphic novel form is so open and fluid, and there's such interesting storytelling going on. Did you, what between the stage and the graphic novel, which did you find more freeing in terms of your creative process?
That's a great question. I think both were equally challenging, equally freeing. At least, by the time I had the play perfected and we had a run and I started the graphic novel, I really had the story, pretty buttoned up. I had no idea how to write a graphic novel. So I did a lot of reading on my own and looked at others and just started taking the script and parsing it out. But, not being the artist, you had to kind of picture in your head what's going to happen in each frame. Like some frames where there's no words, and there's some frames where just maybe four frames in a row, different expressions on someone's face, so you have to really just get creative and think, what am I going to have in each one of these frames that I can then pass this off to an illustrator or a designer, and they just need to use my words and use my thoughts. And so I don't know if it was freeing. It was challenging. It was exciting once the artist took it and then started sending me chapter at a time. It was when I first got the first chapter back, I was like, oh my God, this is beautiful. I mean, the artwork was better than I ever could have imagined, So once you start seeing it in illustration, then I just got really super excited and engaged for the rest of the. Now I can't wait to write more because it's such a fun process,
Yeah, no, that's tremendous. I think that's, really cool. And I think there, like I said, it's such those that format lends itself to such, different types of creativity. Have you given much thought as to what the audience experience difference is between the stage and the book?
Oh yeah. So, I wanted the play, someone who goes to plays a lot, I just knew that there was not a lot of plays out there that you get scared at, and I liked the immersive part. So I wrote the play, depending on the size that, the breakdown of the theater or the makeup of a theater, that you could have some immersive elements. And so when you go into the play, it's kind of like a fun night out for adults. Maybe people don't even like plays that much, but it's just like a fun night out where there's things happening all around you and on the stage and maybe underneath, whatever it is. So you're always on edge. And but there's this great a family story that's really funny and super scary, but you're scared in that theater and it's kind of dark. And it's so I knew that it was like a visceral, fun experience. The book obviously isn't that. I wanted the book to be more of a beautiful kind of piece of art that's really funny as well and scary. So I mean, some of these, and when I explained it to the illustrator, I wanted to say, you could take any of these frames and kind of blow it up and it'd be like a nice piece of art as well, a little dark. But yeah, so it is a different experience. But I think overall, whether it's the play or the graphic novel, I just wanted to tell a really funny and interesting, based on true life at a real place and real things that happened to me story that would be something new and fresh that people had never seen before. And that was what I sought out to do with both the play and the book.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, are you still in Eastern Washington or have you moved on?
Oh no, I was born and raised there. I think I moved away after high school. I did move back for a couple of years in my adult life, a long time ago. But no, I, but the, but you know, Hanford, the nuclear reactor, it's all over the news quite often. There's several articles in the New York Times just this year. I think with Oppenheimer coming out, there's an interesting, because
Renewed interest,
it's
yeah.
all tied to that. In fact, they briefly mentioned, Hanford in Oppenheimer in the movie about, because with Leslie Groves and his going to Washington State for Hanford. So it's all over the news still. And people continue to get sick and they still don't know what to do with these exactly with this cleanup of this 50 million plus gallons of like toxic waste that's in tanks buried in the dirt. And those some of them are leaking, So it's a multi-billion dollar cleanup project that that's going to take a long, 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 long time. And in the meantime, people live there and work there, and there's a lot of issues that happen. So.
Yeah, when it, and it's kind of one of those things that is very out of sight, out of mind. And that is, I grew up near a nuclear manufacturing facility called
Oh.
Rocky Flats in Colorado.
Okay.
And they made the W88 triggers that go in most of the submarine-based nuclear missiles. They had to be very small because the missile is small, has to fit in a submarine. And it was one of those things where, because it was near a major city, the cleanup was a more of a priority. Rocky Flats is totally cleaned up; it's now a nature preserve. Something like Hansford is tough because it's in the middle of nowhere. There ain't nothing out there really, you know, unless you live out there and are from there, then it's, you know, sort of thing. And so I think it's hard to get a lot of energy going for cleaning it up because, well, it's over there, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah,
With
and
those
it's
folks that live in the
interesting,
out there.
right? So it's interesting in this play, it's going to go off Broadway in April, and it's running. It hasn't ran in Washington. I'm having trouble getting it staged there, but I
Yeah.
think that people come out of there educated. They had no idea that it was a thing, and Richland and Hanford were a real place, and this is really happening to this day. So there's that. I think with the book, though, that's one of the ideas about the graphic novel. So for folks who can't make it to one of these, to a city where this play might be going on, is that anyone can, go online and buy the book and see this story in a different interpretation. Maybe it's a whole different experience than being in a dark theater, being scared by a witch and a nuclear reactor. But here you have it all, and so people from anywhere who want to learn about it and experience can get the book. And that was kind of the goal with the graphic novel, was just kind of another avenue to share this interesting story with lots of people,
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's very, and that's, I think the same conversation is had. You know, there's people I don't think people understand. There's these sorts of sites kind of dotted all over the country. Some of them are still very in active use, like Oak Ridge in Tennessee is still active, and despite having a pollution problem. And I have a buddy in St. Louis. St. Louis was one of the first places that they refined uranium-238. And the facility they did it was in downtown St. Louis, and they had such poor management of the radiation, and everything was so hot that they just dumped everything into a pit, including the truck that they brought it in. Well, the problem is they then built the airport over it. So I have this joke, don't stand at the, it's under the runways. Don't stand on the end of the runway at the St. Louis airport for very long because you're standing on a nuclear waste dump sort of thing. But it's throughout, you know, it seems long, long ago and far, far away, but the reality is we're still living with that legacy, you
Oh
know,
yeah.
and
Yeah.
it's still
So
here, it's still present.
yeah. So I think in this story you'll see when you read the book, or anyone who's read the book, is there's of course the nuclear plant, but I really am also telling a horror story. So there's a witch, obviously, who may or may not be a witch, a woman who may or may not be haunting this family. It's about a couple that a gay couple and their black daughter, a white couple and their black daughter, who move into this town, which is very white and very straight and not diverse at all. And they're fish out of waters. And so while they're waiting for their home to be built, one of them gets a job out at Hanford. That's why they move there, is there for a tunnel collapse based on a real collapse that happened a couple of years ago when people got sick. And you don't know if he's getting, and so when the character is getting sicker and sicker and sicker, and darker things are happening, you don't know if it's because of exposure to, say, toxic dust or fumes, or is it because the lady across the street, who may be a witch, may have cursed them. So you don't quite know what's happening, and is there a connection to this witch to Hanford and her history? So it is a horror story, but a fun one, I think. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. So now you mentioned that there's other stuff coming along. So did you leave a cliffhanger? Are we gonna the witch, she continues and does more crazy things? How's
I'm
the
not going to
yeah.
give it away, but there is a cliffhanger. The sequel, the second book, will come out later this year. It's called Snitchland, and it's a different take on Hanford. It's the same characters in Witchland, most of them who make it through. And but it's more than based on all the whistleblowers that have happened. Modern day Hanford, folks who have made safety concerns or lodged complaints have been ignored or they're retaliated against. And it's more of a ghost story. So the Witchland's a definite witch story at Hanford. scary. The second one, which will come out later this year, is a definite, more like a ghost story, kind of ghost meets Erin Brockovich, type thing. And the third one, I'm not going to disclose, but it's a different type of monster. We go away from witches to ghosts to something else, but that's all I'll say.
Oh yes, no, that sounds like a lot of fun. It's this has just kind of become a whole thing. So, and like I said, you're fully merchandised and all put together. So that's it's a definitely a fun thing and a fun series. Well, what now you said it's Amazon later this week. What is your exact publish date?
It's available now. You could go on any retailer, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, Target, Amazon, and you can pre-order it. It's Witchland by Tim Mulligan, Witchland, the graphic novel, I should say. And it comes out officially on the 15th, so February. And or if anyone's more interested in the whole Witchland kind of lore and story and backstory, the website is witchlandplay.com and has all information about the play, the book, the history there, and what's going on. So,
Excellent. Absolutely fascinating. Now, as far as the play goes, you says he's doing is doing off Broadway in New York here soon. Are you putting that out to distribution for other people to buy and produce, or are you just doing it yourself?
well, this is being staged by a theater company that I'd sent the script to, and they really like it. They're called Manhattan Repertory Theater.
Oh,
The
I know them well.
idea
Yeah,
for a
yeah.
new playwright like me is to get it out there, and then eventually the goal would be, hopefully that play would have legs and would continue on, and other, other theater, it'll keep continuing to roll across the country. So that's the goal. But right now, it'll have its third run, and that's the New York run, in April, and it's gonna be really fun, really scary, a much different take on it than the other places. It's real dark, it's real industrial, and it's at a really cool little theater off Broadway called the Chain Theater, and it's gonna be great.
Yeah, no, I have theater connections in West Virginia, and we're always looking for scripts. That's why I was asking
Oh,
by
well,
I
let me
was
know. We're trying to
asking
get,
not
I
to
mean,
be,
I'll talk to
yes,
anyone. Yeah, we're trying to,
I was
we're.
asking by not asking to be kind of like, so do you have a publisher for that script? Can we have a conversation about
That'd be
that?
neat. Right now, I'm a one
So.
man show. I mean, I have a publisher, and I have a some PR people here and there, but I'm not, I don't have a licensing company behind it. So I'm the one people can talk to. So yeah, if you have contacts, let me know. That'd be great.
Yeah, no, it was the great thing about the West Virginia theater scene is in the summer all the equity actors, Broadway is off, and so all the equity actors do theater festivals in the Mid-Atlantic region all summer. So in the summer, you can get tremendous plays with really talented people going because you have all this great talent bumping around the East Coast with nothing to do.
Yeah.
So
Yeah,
and this is a lot of I
you know,
think would be a lot of fun.
I went and saw the play every night this week, and because it was the first week in the desert here in Palm Springs, and it's something the Palm Springsians have never seen before. And so it's fun just to watch the crowd scream and laugh and be fascinated by the Hanford story and the witch story and the fact that it's based on true life. And so audiences are really responding, and critics really, really favorably, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, I'm always amazed every time I've spent most of my life in performing arts. I'm always amazed at different audience reactions to the same show,
Oh
so
yeah,
like
for
throughout a
sure.
run, sort of thing. I'd years and years ago, I did a play about 9/11, and it was about Flight 93, and we did three performances in one day, and each audience had a very different reaction to the exact same show. It was
Yeah.
just it just always interests me because in that theater was a 98 seat th theater. Any group of 98 people, you will end up with a different reaction, sort of thing.
Yeah,
So
totally.
it's
Yeah.
yeah, excellent, excellent. Well, so this is the part of the show where we do plugs, although we kind of already did them, but let's do them one more time because it's supposed to be at the end. In this segment right
Okay.
here. So tell
Go
us where
ahead.
people can find you online, follow you on social media, and all this type of
Yeah,
thing.
great. All information, the best place to go is witchlandplay.com. That has all of it. On social, Witchland has a social and Instagram site. It's under Witchland Play. So at Witchland Play, all one word. And that's Twitter. All the graphic novel stuff is there as well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Cameron Journal podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks. And I hope you enjoy it. the book.
That's all for this episode of the Cameron Journal podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Visit us online at CameronJournal.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I love to talk to my followers and listeners, so please feel free to get us on social media at Cameron Cowan on Twitter. And we'll see you next time on the Cameron Journal podcast.